This is the gospel reading from John chapter 11, verses 1 through 45. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill."
But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again."
The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?"
Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of the world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him."
The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep.
Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. Let us go to him."
Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Mary and Martha to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even though now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him."
Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again."
Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day."
Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?"
She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died."
When Jesus saw her weeping, the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?"
They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?"
Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone."
Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench, because he has been dead 4 days."
Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!"
The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth.
Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go."
Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ. We're still in the season of Lent when we remember Jesus' suffering and death on the cross for our sins. So it may seem rather odd that the gospel reading today, 2 weeks before Easter, is a resurrection story. I guess it's kind of a preview of Easter. Word came to Jesus that his friend Lazarus was ill. Lazarus and his two sisters, Mary and Martha, lived in Bethany, a small town not far from Jerusalem in the land of Judea in the southern part of the country. Much of Jesus' ministry was in the north, in Galilee, where people seemed more receptive to his ministry. In the south, Jesus met a lot of hostility, especially from the religious leaders in Jerusalem. The disciples warned Jesus that it would be dangerous for him to go to Bethany to make a sick call on Lazarus, because the religious leaders in Judea were plotting to kill him. The sisters, Mary and Martha, probably expected Jesus to come at once. They were close friends. But Jesus waited several days. He said that Lazarus had only fallen asleep. But by the time Jesus arrived at the house, Lazarus was already dead. Jesus was not only too late to heal him, but he was late for his funeral. He was already in the tomb 4 days. It was a Jewish custom that burial should take place the same day that a person died, or at least the day after. And there was an old rabbinic belief that the soul lingered near the body for 3 days. So after 4 days, Lazarus was far gone. Martha warned that there would be a stench when Jesus asked that the tomb be opened. One might conclude that among all the miracles performed by Jesus on a scale of 1 to 10, turning water into wine would have been at least a 4, making the lame walk a 5, giving sight to the blind a 6. But raising someone from the dead, that was at least a 10. So it makes one wonder why John is the only gospel writer who records this amazing miracle. Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell about other occasions when Jesus raised the dead, but none of them tell this story. Perhaps John had a special reason for telling it. John's way of telling stories is that they have different levels of meaning. They often have a metaphorical meaning. They have several levels of meaning. Not only do we have here a demonstration of Jesus' power over physical death, but John also uses this story to demonstrate Jesus' power to release people from other tombs and bindings to make them fully alive. What keeps us from being fully alive in this world? Our sin and guilt, our depression, our pain, our addictions, our loss of hope. In this story, Jesus offers new life. Not just at the end of this earthly life. The Gospel of John puts forth the premise that eternal life, words that Jesus often used, begins now in this life, before our physical death. Jesus said, "I have come that you might have life and have it more abundantly." Could it be then that when Jesus raises Lazarus, he isn't just extending his life here on earth for a few days or months or even a few years to continue living as he was, but to give him a more abundant life. I wonder how life changed for him after he was raised and his bindings were removed. When Jesus says to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life," Martha's understanding is that he's simply talking about resurrection at the end of time when all the dead are raised up. But Jesus is talking also about something else. It's been observed that the motivation for so much of our human activity relates to our effort to survive and prolong our lives as long as possible. We don't pay enough attention to the quality of life. It's our human instinct to stay alive. However, the idea that we might live forever causes some problems. For one thing, it would bankrupt our Social Security system very quickly. There was a college professor who wrote a book entitled, "Should We Live Forever? The Ethical Ambiguities of Aging." The author raised some ethical and other kinds of questions, practical issues, about the fact that as modern medicine continues to pursue the goal of extending our lives indefinitely, it causes problems. He asked whether this is really desirable. If we live on, there would be no succession of generations. Our roles as mothers and fathers and grandparents and children would disappear. We would have to stop having children because of such a growing population. It would be unsustainable. We have to die to make room for others. That would be a crass way to say it. If we live on, we'd have to ask ourselves, what shall we do with all this extra time? The late novelist Susan Ertz once observed, "Millions long for immortality, to live forever. But they are the same people who don't know what to do on a rainy Sunday afternoon." It's not just about how long we live, but how well we live. In his memoirs, William Sloan Coffin, once the pastor at Riverside Church in Manhattan, wrote about the part that death plays in giving meaning to life. He said that without death, we'd really never live. We'd take days just to get out of bed, weeks to decide what's next. Chances are we'd be bored to death. Life would just go on and on with no deadlines and no incentives to get things accomplished. Death teaches us the important lesson of how precious life is. There was a story in our local Bayonne newspaper some time ago about Danielle, who was diagnosed with breast cancer 13 years ago. She was 29 and had two kids, a 3-year-old and a 10-month-old. As you might expect, her purpose in life focused on staying well enough to see her two children grow up. She went through surgery and chemotherapy, repeated doctor's visits, tests of all kinds. Death was real for her. But Danielle said it gave her a whole new understanding of life. It was like an epiphany, she says. "It made me prioritize things," she said. "I started to appreciate the things I was taking for granted. I looked at nature. I enjoyed the beauty of the world. Some things didn't matter that much anymore. Not the amount of money we had, not where we lived. It made me stop and really appreciate life and the things that are truly important." Now, as a follow-up to this story, Danielle got into physical fitness after she was well enough and became a bodybuilder, of all things. She won some national competitions, which brought her a lot of media attention. She helped organizations raise money for cancer research. She was an inspiration to other cancer survivors. Death taught her to be fully alive. Maybe you've had an epiphany of your own in your own life as a result of some life-threatening event. It taught you to make every day count, to receive life as a gift. A poet by the name of Jane Kenyon wrote a wonderful little poem entitled Otherwise. I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, a sweet ripe peach. It might have been otherwise. All morning I did the work I love. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed with paintings on the wall and planned another day, just like this day. But one day I know it will be otherwise. Reflecting on our human frailty, in Psalm 90, the psalmist prays to the Lord, "So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Some of the things in today's text are difficult to understand. Concerning the illness and death of Lazarus, Jesus says, "It is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now, in John's Gospel, the words glory and glorified are code words for Jesus' suffering and death. Jesus does not seem so concerned about the longevity of life, but rather what his life and death would accomplish for the glory of God. As we read on in chapters 11 and 12 of John, we find that the authorities use this miracle of raising Lazarus as a pretext for plotting Jesus' death and to kill Lazarus also. Apparently, the power to defeat death posed a threat to those authorities who saw their purpose as maintaining law and order. It says in the text that when Jesus called Lazarus to come out of the tomb, he cried with a loud voice, as if he wanted to awaken him from sleep. "Lazarus, come out!" I wonder whether Lazarus really wanted to come back into his old decrepit body. His sisters Mary and Martha were overjoyed to have him back, but what about poor Lazarus? What did it mean for him? Would Jesus have meant, "Come out, my friend, we're going to Jerusalem"? So much for the ordinary living and dying from illness and old age. So much for the sole purpose of prolonging life as long as possible. Let's go instead to where we can give our lives away to the glory of God. Jesus had often warned his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem to suffer and die, and that they too must take up their cross and follow him. We heard it in our text today when Thomas says to the other disciples, "Let us go that we may die with him." Did he really know what he was saying? I don't believe that Jesus was suggesting that we should intentionally cut short our lives here on earth or neglect maintaining our good health. Jesus has had his own purpose to give up his life so soon to accomplish our salvation by dying on the cross. But our sole purpose too should not be to prolong our lives as long as possible. Neither should we waste our lives by pursuing things that do not count, that do not last. We are called to live with the purpose of glorifying God. A modern writer tells about her near-death experience when she was in the hospital. She says, "The last sensation I remember was incomprehensible pain and noise, and then a tunnel and complete silence." But unlike other near-death experiences reported by others, she said, "I saw no lights, no angels, no dead relatives, and no friendly saints. Rather, I found myself very much awake in a weightless, imageless, peaceful reality. I experienced the life I had left as an illusion and the new life I was entering, blessed freedom and relief." But then the writer goes on to describe how the recovery nurse forced her to come back. She felt her body shaken and her name called. She heard herself protesting, "No, no!" It felt like slipping back into a lesser reality. She felt helpless and angry. She didn't want to come back into this fake life, as she called it. She said, "I came back to consciousness disappointed, frustrated, and unspeakably sad, and again with excruciating pain." I wonder whether this was not unlike the experience of Lazarus when he heard his name called, having been so close to the glory of heaven. Did he want to shout back at Jesus, "No, no, please let me go"? There is a sense in which we are afraid to die, but we are also afraid to live. But Jesus covers them both. He says, "I am the resurrection and the life." Of course, none of us is dead yet the way Lazarus was dead, but we are called out of our tombs, so to speak, to be fully alive in this life. Are we ready for it? What might it mean for you and for me today to be fully alive? And let me tell you the rest of the story about the woman who had the near-death experience in the hospital, who resisted coming back. She writes, "A few hours after the recovery nurse called my name and shook me back from eternity into this lesser reality, another nurse put a beautiful and hungry baby into my arms. And as I held him tightly, his body close to mine, I experienced something no less miraculous than the life I had just left behind." Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life." And now to him who by the power at work within us is able to do far more than we can ask or imagine, to him be glory in the church and in Jesus Christ to all generations forever and ever. Amen.